you cleaned up the streets, you cleaned them good. Pretty soon we'll be chasing down overdue library books.
It'll liven up in a minute, trust me.
I'm Gotham's reckoning.
Mr. Fox, get me back in the game.
I call it the Bat. And yes, Mr. Wayne, it does come in black.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Now you're just showing off.
Rated PG-13. Advance tickets now on sale. In theaters and IMAX July 20th.
And welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Since this is Hunter leading in, that means we're doing a review or discussion, as it were, of a new release. And that new release that Stu and I, it's just us two, no guests today, will be discussing is The Dark Knight Rises, because we like to pick the little movies, the small movies, the movies no one's talking about. Right, Stu?
The translator's yes.
Okay, I thought Mako was on the other line for a second.
Mako man.
Yeah, the Mako the caveman. Like in Highlander 3. Well, when he got his head cut off and it was in the dirt, and Mario Van Peebles cut his head off and it's talking anyway.
It's because he's Mako. He could do anything.
Of course. Mako's not dead, dude.
No.
He's sleeping.
He's only sleeping, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises. What's the most... It's one of the most anticipated movies of the summer. That and Avengers are the two big, big things this summer.
I'd say this is probably more because the fact that people already knew the brand of Batman. The Avengers, a lot of people knew it from the comics, and they knew the...
They knew the
separate
movies.
Titles that came out. Yeah. The Thor and the Captain Americas and all that. But as an actual assembled, quote-unquote, unit, people were like, yeah, I'm curious to see the Avengers, but people had a real hunger to see the new Batman, the new and the last Batman of this trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, because Dark Knight was so huge, you know.
Oh, my God.
Like, I mean, that was a phenomenon. I know Avatar made more money, but I think a lot of people were speaking poorly of Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody spoke
poorly of Dark Knight, no.
I mean, everybody was singing the praises of Dark Knight. There were a couple of dissenting voices. My roommate at the time really didn't like it, and he loved Batman Begins, and he did not like The Dark Knight at all.
Oh.
But there were some dissenting voices, but it was just such a huge thing, universally acclaimed. You know, there was outrage when it didn't get more Oscar nominations, but it did win for Best Supporting Actor for Heath Ledger.
Just stop there. Just off the top of your memory, did Armin White and A.O. Scott like The Dark Knight?
I know for a fact Armin White, I don't remember what, I never read his review of it, but I know for a fact Armin White didn't like it because he always pans Christopher Nolan movies. He never gives a good review to Christopher Nolan.
Not even a Prestige?
Probably not. I don't think so.
Jesus.
I mean, he panned Inception. He panned... and every time he speaks to Chris Nolan, he speaks in broad strokes that he's just terrible. You know? Armand White hates it. A.O. Scott, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, then. But, like you were saying, most anticipated film, I think, of the summer, definitely.
Yeah.
Easily.
And it's a big release. And it's just like... And it's more or less the question on everybody's mind was, will it... live up to the Dark Knight,
will it fall into the curse of the thirds?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because that's the thing, is like, because Spider-Man 2 is arguably one of it's in the top 10 of great comic book movies.
And I like one better, but yeah, that's me.
I like two more, but one is very good. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
But just two is just pure Sam Raimi blasted straight at your face. That's what I like about it. But Spider-Man 3, I mean,
it
I don't hate Spider-Man 3 as much as everybody else does. I think it has some really strong elements to it.
Sandman was good.
Oh, yeah. Sandman's fantastic. And
even Venom. I like Venom as well.
I thought the stuff with Venom was well handled in it, because I also thought that Sam Raimi was kind of making fun of the whole Venom element, like, because he wasn't a fan of that.
Yeah.
And he just did it because he had to, and so I think he felt like he was going to make fun of it with emo Peter Parker and him acting like an asshole, and I thought that stuff was kind of funny. And I think a lot of fans didn't like that because they take Venom really seriously.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But anyway. But Spider-Man 3 was still a massive disappointment. And, you know, a lot of times with these movies, they just... the wheels fall off in the third movie for some reason. They bite off more than they can chew. You know, like, they have too many villains, too many plot arcs. They're just overstuffed.
X-Men 3.
X-Men 3 is a big one, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. X-Men 3 just... that movie just, you know, fell apart because it just stuffed way too much shit in there.
Yeah,
and the whole
did.
Dark Phoenix thing, you know, which is such a beloved story arc in the X-Men mythos, and they just kind of gave it this McDonald's treatment. You know?
Taco Bell treatment.
Taco Bell. X-Men Bell. Taco X-Men.
X-Men Taco Bell.
Taco X. That's the name of our... I'm going to create a mutant named Taco X. Weapon X meets Taco X.
Yeah, sounds like the name of the new ZZ Top album, isn't it? Taco X.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
Get their agent.
All right.
Horn.
Okay.
Okay.
So
I saw this movie on Sunday while I was on holiday in Taos, New Mexico. I had to tear myself away from my family to go to the theater to see it. And you just saw this last night, today?
Last night.
Okay.
Now let me ask you a question. How much did you pay for your ticket to see this?
$5.75. Because it was in Taos, and normally ticket prices are a lot more expensive, but over there they were cheap.
Okay.
It's awesome.
So I paid, brace yourself, I paid $18.50 for this.
Did you see that on IMAX?
Nope. That is a standard price for an adult every session. It doesn't matter if you go on a Wednesday at 10 a.m. It is still $18.50.
Really? You don't get matinee discount or anything?
There is no discount, sir.
That is some bullshit.
So what I did was this. I left home at 3:45 in the afternoon. It's a 5-minute drive to the theater. I thought the session was at 4 p.m. I thought, I'll get that. I knew it's about nearly 3 hours, and I'll come home and watch my football shows because I'm a tragic. Anyway, session's on at 4:40 in the afternoon. I thought, I've got 40 minutes to kill, really? So what I did was there was no one manning the barrier. So I snuck in. I watched about 20 minutes of the Three Stooges film that was playing. And I was really, really laughing hard. I mean, I was so impressed how good this was. And
I love the Three Stooges.
Oh, man. And the guy who played Larry, it's hard because Larry's a very unique-looking individual. But the guys who play Mo and Curly, my God, they got nailed
down. Will Sasso
perfect.
Nailed Curly, dude. I mean,
And the guy who played Mo as well, holy shit. I mean, I really thought I was looking at Mo and Curly. It was just incredible.
Dude, I mean, they got that physicality down to a T.
Yeah. I mean, so that just got released here in Australia. What was it? A week or so ago? It's
really?
Just been released on fucking Blu-ray in the States. So I already placed my order to get it sent here. I'm not paying $18.50 to watch it when I can get it sent here for $25.
Just buy the fucking thing.
Exactly right. I mean, I've seen 20 minutes. I really laughed hard at it, which I don't really laugh a lot at films because I'm not, you know, a miserable person, but I just... You know, I'm just that way inclined. But I really, really laughed at Three Stooges quite a bit.
One of my favorite thing in that movie, we'll get to Dark Knight in a second, but is Larry David as one of the nuns.
I didn't get that quite far in. I either missed that part. I got maybe about...
He's right at the beginning. He's like one of the first characters you see in the movie.
I missed that bit. I got the part when Mo was on some reality show like The Hills or Jersey Shore.
It was Jersey Shore, yeah.
Oh, my God. God, I was laughing that hard. But
in the trailer, I was like, this is going to suck. And then when I saw it in the movie, I laughed my ass off. So.
Yeah. So I'm really, really keen to watch the Three Stooges film.
Yeah.
And, our buddy Rick was saying it was really good as well, yeah.
And it's the Farrelly brothers, and, you know, stuff like Dumb and Dumber owes, like, such a debt to the Three Stooges.
Oh, it does, yeah.
You know, so it's perfect for them to be doing it.
So does that one with Matt Damon as the...
Stuck
on You. That's the one.
With Greg Kinnear. Yeah.
Greg Kinnear, that's the one. Yeah. So I was actually in a good mood watching the Three Stooges. All right, I'm going to watch this, and I'll walk out when it's about 5 minutes before Dark Knight starts. Little bitch, arsehole twat comes in with a little broom and says, oh, can I see your ticket? I said, I'm just killing time until I watch Dark Knight. and which I didn't have a ticket for at the time, yeah, because I didn't have one.
Okay, you just shoot her straight.
So I thought, okay, what do I do? Do I just sit here and tell her to fuck off, or do I get out and do the right thing and not get myself thrown out by security? So I thought, well, I don't need the headache. So I said, okay, look, can't I stay another 10 minutes till my film starts? She goes, oh, I can't let you do that. I said, okay, no worries. Thanks, you fucking bitch. And she walked away. She gave me a look back. I'm like, well, I don't give a shit who you are.
Did you call her that?
Yeah, I called her a fucking bitch, yeah.
Oh, whoa, jeez.
If I'm sitting down watching a film I really enjoy that I hadn't paid for, but who cares, I was still enjoying it.
Yeah.
And she throws me out. Yeah, I said, thanks
a lot.
Well,
but, you know, she's just doing her job, you know.
Yeah, that's what my wife said. She goes, Jesus, Stuart, she's just doing her job.
Yeah, I know.
I don't give a shit. I'm enjoying it. I mean, I didn't go to a, you fucking bitch, like that. So I went from being on a big high of watching The Three Stooges to coming out in a big downer. I thought, shit. So anyway, I went to the counter. I said, look, give us a ticket for Dark Knight. And I bought it and begrudgingly cried as the $18.50 left my hand. only to get $1.50 in change. I thought, I'm not buying concessions. You can go get fucked on that, seriously.
Oh, no. Dude, that's the thing. I never buy concessions. Sometimes I'll buy, like, if it's one of those theaters, I'll buy a beer or something.
Well, I ain't got no beer, but these ones, but it's illegal.
Oh, jeez. But, you know, but, like, movie theater popcorn just tastes like death to me because I can feel my arteries closing when I eat it. You know?
You can find, like, a little midget swimming in the bottom of the butter at the bottom of the container. It's like, thing is drowned in butter.
And then, like, drinks and stuff. Like, I always just have to take a roar and piss. So it's just not worth it. Like, and you part with so much money to kill yourself with that stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. So I knew I wasn't buying no concessions, no popcorn. I just walked away. I thought, boy, I'm hungry. Because my ritual usually is go to a burger stand and grab a couple of burgers and then eat. And I'm right, because I have to have food every so often. I'm just like that. And I didn't have anything. I thought, shit, I've got a 3-hour movie ahead of me. So I walk in and let me ask you something. So I took a seat. Because they actually have allocated seating here. I know this probably sounds superfluous, but I'm just explaining the ritualistic attitude.
The Aussie
they have.
Ritual of going to the cinema.
Yeah, they actually have your seat number printed with a map inside the door when you walk in. So
really,
you look on your ticket and you match it up to where it is on the map, and you find that seat and you sit down. I'm like, I'm not doing that, because I walked in and there was about maybe 12 people there. I am not moving to a seat that these people have allocated me.
No.
Considering they kicked me out of the Three Stooges that I was enjoying. So I moved to the front, or the second tier back, which had nobody there because a lot of people parked themselves up the back. And I lifted 3 armrests up and I just lay down and put my coat off and use it as a pillow. I was lying down like a bed watching the movie. I thought, what are you going to do? I paid a ticket, you're going to kick me out? I was in one of those moods yesterday, Hunter. It was weird.
You were the worst theater patron ever.
Oh, man, I'm a shocker. And I had my fucking phone going off throughout the thing, like Karen said.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I had the phone off about
terrible.
4 messages. I don't usually have it on, but I had it on. I said, look, if you call me, if you need me, contact me. I called her bluff. Because I said, like, don't contact me. She gets me, Stuart, can you grab some pizzas for the kids when you come home? I'm like, texting back, no,
phone
I can't.
In the theater?
I didn't answer. She sent me a text message.
Okay.
But I sent it back, and I get another one back about a minute later saying, oh, what time are you coming home? Oh, 8 p.m. Oh, can you pick this up? And I'm so lucky nobody did anything and came and punched my head in.
Oh, my gosh. There was a guy messing with his phone in my screening, and I was, like, finding things in my pocket to crumple up and throw at him because his phone was blinding me.
Oh, man. I was kind of exactly. I was kind of discreet about it, but I was just in one of those moods yesterday. It was really odd.
You were in I'm going to fuck with everybody mood yesterday.
Oh, man. Absolutely. Like, you took that 20 minutes of Three Stooges away from me. I'm going to fucking ruin your day, you bastards. Seriously.
I feel like I know where this is going.
Okay. So, anyway, let me ask you. Okay, so I plant myself down. And we got the Superman Man of Steel teaser. Did you get that?
I didn't.
Screening.
No, it was weird. Okay. I didn't, but I saw it on the internet beforehand.
Okay.
So,
we got that trailer, which looks
a lot like Tree of Life.
I can't say I was impressed by it. Yeah, I wasn't impressed by that trailer, that teaser at all.
I really liked it as a teaser because it just gave me a little bit a taste of Americana.
Yeah.
It gave me a warm feeling that I liked, and it wasn't playing on anything from the Donner films.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it is aping Malick very much.
Right.
But, you know, if you're going to ape a director, ape Terrence Malick. So, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Did you get the Skyfall trailer at your one?
No.
And we got it at our one. And let me just say, man, I was really hyped to see that new Bond. That looks fantastic.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. Anything, it's got to be better than Quantum of Solace, let me tell you what.
It can't be the worst, but it looks, like with Sam Mendes, I'm like,
I don't like Sam Mendes at all. I think his movies suck ass. But, you know, if he can just, the thing is like, with the last Bond movie, they hired an arrogant auteur to plug in.
Yeah.
Sam Mendes, I have hope because he is British, and, you know, that he may have some respect for what Bond is.
Oh, yeah, he would have grown up on it.
The thing
definitely.
Is, it's like, Bond is bigger than the auteur. The director is there to shepherd the project, to do a certain job. It is the special effects team's job to do this. It's Daniel Kleinman's job to do that. It's the composer's job to do that. Everybody has a role. You know, the director isn't the boss of everything in that.
No.
Like, no, it's the property, the and you are serving it.
Yeah.
You know.
You're a servant of it.
And I'm just hoping that if Sam Mendes understands that, then and he's able to get out of the way, I won't have a problem. But, you know, with Quantum of Solace, that movie is what happens when you hire a stuffy auteur to do your movie. He overrides everything. He takes control of everything, and he makes a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, from this trailer, and it's only a trailer, it really, really got me excited. It's like,
well,
I've got to see this. So the film starts, and I thought, okay, you've got to push every mood you've got away to watch this. Because as I've said for the last 48 hours, I'm going in with zero expectations. I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm going in with zero expectations because I don't want to falter and say... Because with the Avengers, I kind of had expectations. Even though I said I didn't, I kind of had expectations. Like, well, you know, I should have known better.
Mm.
And I really walked away disappointed, as you guys know. So I said, screw it. It's a clean sheet, a flat level, what do you want to call it? I'm having nothing. And if you were to say to me, I'll get into the meat and potatoes of it, but I'll just skip over it and say, if you were sitting next to me and say, 2 to 2.5 hours in, if you had to nudge me and said, hey, Stu, what do you think? I would have said, I don't like this film much. If you had got me at 2 hours and 45 minutes, I would have said, this film is fucking excellent.
Really?
Yes. Because the last 5 or 6 minutes, you know the part I'm talking about?
The last five or six minutes.
Yeah. Of the film, yeah, before the credits. Yeah. Everything just sort of, it sort of crystallized. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit, this is what they were getting to at the end.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing like, okay, we're going to give you the big reveal. It was the way they tied it up at the end. They didn't tie it up with no pretty bow. Okay. It was tied up the way it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked away. I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, the only other time I've done that with a Nolan film where I walked away from the ending thinking that was a fucking great film was The Prestige. But The Prestige had me all the way from the start. I was intrigued by it. I knew Batman, obviously, from having seen the other ones and obviously knowing the character very well. But
yeah,
I was sitting there going, it's just something's not sitting right with me, you know? I don't hate it, but something's not sitting right. But then the last bit happened, I walked away. I was like, I actually got goosebumps. I thought, shit, what an ending. That was incredible.
I felt the same way coming out of it.
Yeah.
I really thought about it. I was really excited. I was shaking. I felt such a sense of elation from satisfaction.
Yeah.
Walking out of this film.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm skipping right to the end, but it is relevant. And that last scene with Michael Caine in the cafe in Paris or whatever it was, where he was meant to be at.
Sort of Inception-like, I felt. I got an Inception vibe from that.
But Inception just bored me, as I've made that point clear.
Well, I'm just talking about the...
Yeah, the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw that last bit, and I thought, no, they're not going to do it, are they? He's not going to have the balls to do it. And he did, and Michael Caine looks over, and he sees... Well, we're obviously going to get spoiler heavy, so he sees Bruce Wayne, and it's like, oh, man, what an end. What a perfect end. Mm-hmm. And all the ends, like, you know, with you find out about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character,
yep,
about his real name, and it's like being beaten with a stick of awesomeness just repeatedly, one after another after another. It's like,
well, wow. I was thinking this had to happen with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because when you're watching the film, you find out he's from an orphanage. It's like, okay,
yeah.
We know who this guy is. But I was thinking, you know, they're not going to go full-on sidekick with him.
No.
But what I think they're going to do is the mantle is going to be passed on.
Definitely.
Because the whole time in the first film, and I knew this movie had to go back to the themes of the first film a little bit with the... You make yourself more than a man. Like, the Batman is not a person. The Batman is not Bruce Wayne. The Batman is the Batman.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, it's like there's that kind of running gag with Gordon doing that. Yeah. But that's how it is. And so, like, you know, even though Bruce Wayne has given up being the Batman, that doesn't mean the Batman's gone. It means this guy's the Batman now. Kind of like in the comic books, eventually... I think it's Dick Grayson takes up the mantle of Batman, and Damian Wayne becomes Robin after Bruce is gone.
Did you? I mean, it's just me, but did you find the correlation between the end of that, where Bruce Wayne is basically dead, and that just the Batman lives? Did you find it similar to Hitchcock's Psycho, where Norman Bates is pretty much dead and it's just Mother now?
No, I didn't. I didn't think of that, but that never crossed my mind. But yeah. I know Nolan's a Hitchcock mark, but that never. That didn't cross my mind because it's not.
I'm not saying he drew directly from that, but just the sort of parallel I'm seeing. That's just me.
Oh, that's your reading. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. But we've skipped to the end. We should get into it.
Okay.
I did have issues with this film. I will go out and say I was wrong about one thing. Because I blasted this poor girl, Anne Hathaway, for the longest time as. Well, she's not named as Catwoman, but she's Catwoman, basically.
Oh, she's Selina Kyle.
Man, she was... Anne Hathaway was fantastic in this. I thought she was great.
Like, yeah, everybody was saying how terrible she's cast. She looks so stupid.
Oh, man, I was one of them. I was, like, one of her biggest detractors.
My whole thing was with everything beforehand, I was like, Christopher Nolan's deserves some trust, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, when you see it, on film, and when you see her, I'm sure, you know, because I remember when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker, fans everywhere were screaming, "You've got to be fucking kidding me."
Exactly.
And then when they saw the movie, they went, "Nobody can replace Heath Ledger," you know?
Yeah.
That's what
I'm
not got.
One of those. Yeah, I'm not one of those who ascribes to that, but that's just me.
Yeah. But I don't either. I mean, I think somebody else will play the Joker in the future, and somebody else will do a fine job with it. And
but you're talking about the general consensus at the time of the Dark Knight.
Oh, sure. But beforehand, it was like nobody can replace Jack Nicholson and blah 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 blah.
Cesar Romero.
Jack Nicholson was just playing Jack Nicholson, you know?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson in whiteface, basically. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. But
I was really impressed with Anne Hathaway. Well done to her. She.
Me too.
She proved me wrong. I love being proven wrong.
She really just got that role down. Like, I really didn't know, you know, all the stuff we'd seen beforehand was like her on Batman's motorcycle and her doing these things that we don't associate with Catwoman, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, and they kind of didn't show us a lot in the trailers and stuff of her doing her thing. And so when finally saw it, it really took us by surprise, and it was a great pleasure.
Yeah, it was. I did have issues with the with Nolan. I wouldn't say interjecting his beliefs. I'd say hammering his beliefs about the Occupy situation. It really bothered me quite a bit.
Heavy-handed, or
I was not a fan of the whole Occupy movement as it was. They had it in New York. I guess they had it in lots of parts. They had it in Melbourne here, and I was really
they had it in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, yeah.
Oh fuck. I apologize that my country's retarded culture has infected yours on that level.
Oh no, I don't think it needed. I don't think it was.
I apologize on behalf of Americans who you know.
No, because I'm sorry. Because dunderheads are everywhere. They don't need an influence. They're there anyway. They're going to do it. But they had the whole thing here. I remember being caught up in the city at the many times where the actual Occupy was being taken place in one of the national parks there, and they were screaming about being assaulted by the police, and the police are doing their job. I'm very pro police. That's just the way I am. I'm all for a police state, really.
Jesus,
and curfews. Okay. Oh shit, yeah.
I'm not for a police state. I'm for liberty. But at the same time,
I wouldn't say like Nicaragua, like the death squads or anything like that. But I'm more for curfews and shit on teenagers. Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Me too.
Yeah. So, they'll run around there saying, right, you can't pitch tents on the park. It's a violation of the law. So what they were doing was dressing themselves up as tents and trying to get loopholes. Like, you guys are a bunch of idiots, really.
Okay.
And they were making me really angry, and because you couldn't escape it here. And they were screaming out protesting. Mm-hmm. You walk down through town, they're screaming at you, take back the city. He's like, take fucking your own city back. You know,
take back
you're screaming.
The city.
You're talking about, oh, you know, you're against... consumerism and shit, yet you stand there with your fucking iPhones filming the police. You're talking through your asses. I mean, you know what? The idea might be good. In all honesty, the idea might be good, but the way it was executed was just by idiots. It was run by idiots.
Well, it's just like, I think the whole thing with okay, like, so your problem with the film with Occupy was, did you feel the film was pro or anti Occupy?
A pro.
I felt it was anti-Occupy.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's something I liked about it, is that I felt it had the balls to show these people for what they are, and that's people with entitlement issues.
yeah.
People who are... like, there's this very telling moment where, you know, Catwoman... espouses very Occupy like rhetoric during the dance scene, where she says, you know, how could you wonder how you could all live so large without leaving something for the rest of us, and there's a storm coming and batten down the hatches and all that.
Yeah.
Well, later there's a scene after Bane has, and Bane uses his agenda is to destroy Gotham, but he uses class warfare as a means to an end. And
that's right.
So he says very Occupy-like things to the people of Gotham, even though his agenda is to kill all of them. He says, like, take back your city, and, you know, they have the kangaroo courts, which are very reminiscent of the revolutions in China and France.
Okay, hold it right there. That was Cillian Murphy as the judge, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the Scarecrow.
Cillian Murphy, yeah. Because I'm thinking... God, that looks like him, but it can't be him. Surely.
Yeah, that was him. He was playing Jonathan Crane, the Scarecrow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah, I thought it was him, but I'm just, like I said.
Nope, that was. I mean, they even said, they even called him Crane in one scene. They said,
oh, that's right, yes. Yeah, I missed them.
So you, and there's a scene later on where Selina Kyle, Catwoman, and her friend are in this house. And it's a very upper class home. And, you know, the rich are dragged into the streets and executed, like, you know, the monstrous deeds that were done in China and in France and any other place where there's been a communist uprising. And it's not portrayed in a good way. It's portrayed as madness. But in the scene, Catwoman and her friend are in this house, and it's this upscale house, but it's destroyed. And Selina says, this place used to be nice once.
Yeah.
And her friend says, well, it's everybody's house now.
Yeah. Did you get the feeling
that was very much, it's everybody's house now. Great. Then it's nobody's house and it sucks.
Do you think that was a nod to Arkham Asylum, like the inmates have taken over?
There's been stuff in other in comic books before that.
Yeah.
Where really it felt more like Arkham City, that game. But there's also in the comics... there's been instances where the city's become overrun, but Arkham City, it's like elements, like a whole section of old Gotham is basically, it's like Escape from New York, you know?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Where it's just a giant prison, but it's a ghost part of the town.
Or like that game, Batman Arkham Asylum, is basically, that's basically what it is. It's like,
well, in Arkham Asylum, you're in Arkham Asylum. In Arkham City, you're in, it's like Escape from New York with Batman and his rogues gallery.
Yeah. But I'm talking about with the actual game, and once you get out of the asylum, you're actually in the grounds. And
oh, yeah, sure, but Arkham City's a game, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't got it yet. I need to pick it up, seriously.
Arkham City's awesome. It's a fun game.
So I did have a problem with that, but that washed away after
but
a while.
But I don't think that's a... I think you're barking up the wrong tree there.
I was when I watched it. I was angry. Not to the point where I actually got up and wanted to walk out. Not my way, because I was lying down.
But you felt it was pro-occupy, but I don't think it is. I think it's decidedly the opposite. And also, when I posted about it on Facebook, a lot of my friends who support the Occupy movement were saying... That comparison, you're reading too much into it, because Occupy doesn't use guns and all that stuff. And I kind of wonder if they don't know what a metaphor is. I mean, you know, it's not a literal translation of the Occupy movement. It's the language being espoused. It's the philosophies behind it. It's the... using the have-nots, and when I say the have-nots, I mean the have-nots who resent the haves.
Yeah.
Instead of doing something about it, it's that. And Bane uses those people who harbor resentment to achieve his ends. And a lot of politicians do this. I think especially certain politicians in America right now who are in power use this. We saw it with Barack Obama the other week, saying if you have a small business, you didn't build it. And I know there's nuance to it, but, you know, Barack Obama has spent zero time in the business world, and he doesn't understand it, so he's talking through his asshole. But
welcome to Republican cast.
Sorry, I probably just lost a bunch of listeners there, but it's true. I mean, it's using the sentiments of the have-nots who resent the haves to...
Yeah.
It's not have-nots against the haves. It's have-nots who resent the haves to, you know... That's who they're preying on.
But, I mean, this is definitely the most political superhero film I've ever seen. You
know, a lot of people have said that The Dark Knight is a very political film.
Oh, no. Not compared to this, no.
I mean, compared to this... This movie is more overtly political. The Dark Knight, you know, a lot of people think that this is BS, but I happen to think that it is that it's a metaphor. It's about the war on terror.
Absolutely.
It's a very post-9/11 film, like Batman is George Bush.
Yeah.
The Joker is Al-Qaeda, etc. And, you know, it's a very thin... It may not have been intentional, but I think it's there. Because there's a lot of things that were going on at the time that make their way into that narrative. So The Dark Knight, I think, is political, but it's, you know, not as much as... This movie is way more up with the times. You have the whole Wall Street thing.
Oh, yeah.
And another thing, like another moment that was there that made me raise my eyebrow was there's this guy from the exchange outside with the police, and he's like, you guys have to do something about this, when Bane and his men are in there, and he goes, man, I'm not doing something for you and your money. And he's like, I stuffed my money in the mattress. And he goes, it's not my money, it's everybody's money, it's everybody's money, and if something happens, that money stuffed in your mattress is going to be worth a hell of a lot less. We're putting this in here now, so we're explaining the importance of this. Okay, all right. Why is that there?
I mean, I thought about this film for a long time. I didn't think I would, but I thought about it for a long time after I'd come out. I got out about 7:45 at night. I came home, and it was hard to think, because I'm watching my football shows for about three hours afterwards. I'm thinking about Dark Knight and trying to watch my football shows. I just kept thinking about it. I thought, how can a film take me from 2.5 hours in, nearly the end of the film, to 15 minutes later, me thinking, this is a very, very clever movie. I mean... Yeah, I couldn't work it out. I'm still thinking about it. I'm actually sitting here now thinking, geez, I want to really go see this film again.
I'm going to see it again, and I want to see it in IMAX just to get the full numbiness of it.
Yeah, see, the thing was, I wasn't polarized by the IMAX footage like I was with Dark Knight. Dark Knight really bugged the crap out of me. This one seemed a lot more seamless, even though I didn't see it in IMAX. So I've obviously just got a 2.35 print at my theater. That's why I have real trouble watching the Dark Knight on Blu-ray, because it just... The constant aspect ratio shifts just...
I've noticed that there's a hang-up of yours.
Yeah. I mean, even with films like More American Graffiti, where it's got it, I kind of dig it.
In American Graffiti, though, I think it's kind of... It's very much drawing attention to itself.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, I really want to see this film again. I'm not done with this discussion. I'm just saying it because I've got to say, I really want to see this again. I don't want to pay $18.50 again. Hopefully one of the revival theaters down here in Melbourne, the Astor or something, play it, and they're about $10. I can deal with that.
Yeah.
Because, boy, 4 months away from it being on the home video is going to be a long, long time, me thinking about this film.
I know. I'm really wanting it on Blu-ray right now, just so I can
tell me about it.
Pop it in and watch it again.
It's just the sort of thing I need to watch again and really dissect a bit further, because I can't sit there and say, I really liked it, and I've got everything in it. I've worked it all out. I'd be lying. Sure. You'd be a fool to say that. I don't think anybody's got to accept the people associated with the film. We've seen it over and over and over. They know what they're doing, and they wrote it, obviously.
But I know what you're talking about, though. I've had that happen in a movie where I'm kind of not convinced. I have my eyebrows raised. I'm kind of fussy about something. And then the movie does something at the very end that knocks me on my ass, kind of, and that just ties it together so beautifully. I'm like, oh. These guys were 10 steps ahead of me the whole time. Great. I'm
exactly
happy.
Exactly what I was thinking. I promise you, I was driving home, and I was nearly home. I thought, those guys were way ahead of me through that film, and I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
I love being proven wrong. People think I'm a narcissistic fool, and I'm like, oh, my arm's crossed, and I'm not going to like it. I mean, everyone was saying that there, Stuart's going to hate it. I'm not going to go on a fanboy rant.
I thought you were going to hate it. I was like, Stu's called his shot. He's not going to like it.
No. You know, people are just saying, oh, this film's going to be awesome because Stuart hates it. Well, that's just silly saying that, really. If I don't like it, it's going to be good. You know, I mean, people say, they say it's a joke, and I dig that. But it's sort of a stigma I've got to, cross I've got to bear sometimes. But that was so ahead of me. Like I said, I love being proven wrong. I really, really do. And thanks,
I'm glad you liked
thank
it.
You for
I'm,
proving
I'm
me
really
wrong.
I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, so am I. I mean, I'm sick of shelling out nearly $20 a pop. And like I said, with Avengers, with Iron Man 2, I paid like, what was it, 16 at the time before they jacked the price
Iron
up
Iron Man 2, $18.50 is way too much to watch that movie.
Yeah, I was so disappointed with it, but we've touched all over before. Now, let me tell you one, Pete, that really infuriated me, and it's not the filmmaker's fault, it's my fault. When they're in that prison, like about, three quarters of the way through the movie?
Yeah.
When that prison out in the, wherever the hell they're at, I lost track of where they're at. I was starving by this time. Like, I was really doubled over in hunger. I was like, do I walk out and buy a burger and miss a good 15 minutes of the film?
No!
I don't want to do that. And then these guys, when Bruce Wayne's trying to scale the wall and get out, they keep screaming, fish, fish, pasta, pasta. That's all I heard from them.
That's what... It's like, it sounds like dishe, dishe, basura or something. Basura. But it sounds fish, fish, pasta, pasta.
And they're going, fish, pasta. I'm saying, shut up. I'm fucking hungry.
That's what you were hearing.
All I was hearing was fish, fish, pasta, pasta. I'm like, oh, my stomach's killing me.
Oh, my gosh. You're like Ray Milland in The Lost Weekend when he sees the dancing girls on the stage and they turn into dancing bottles of booze because he wants a drink.
Yeah, that's right. So, and they just kept going. And that sequence went on and on. I was like, can you just scale this damn wall so they can shut up screaming about fish pasta? But no, he fell down again and he scaled again. But, I mean, I can laugh about it now that I ate a whole chicken when I got home because I was that freaking hungry. But, boy, that was excruciating at the time. Fish, fish, pasta, pasta.
Pasta.
Yes. Now,
Alfred.
Michael Caine, really impressed with him. I mean, this was as meaty as a role he's had in this Batman series.
And he's in it a lot less than the other two films.
Yeah, he is, but what they give him and the range they give
gold.
Him.
It's gold.
It really is, especially towards the end. It's like, when we saw Jim Gordon reading that reading those words, I thought, no. I kind of twigged, but I wasn't sure. I thought, they're not going to go there. And then you see the headstone, you see Bruce Wayne, is like, oh my God, they've done it. And you just see Michael Caine break down. Like, what a... And you think, this is why this guy is a legend Yeah, a god of acting, really.
I mean, you know, because Michael Caine's been kind of the kindly voice of reason, the conscience of Bruce Wayne in the past two films.
Yeah.
And he totally breaks with that in this movie, and I thought that was great.
Yeah, what a great move to do that.
I thought the scene where he said goodbye to Bruce was just like, holy shit, Bruce is on his own. You know?
Yeah.
Like, anything...
And especially when that illusion...
There were these things that happened where Michael Caine leaves him, you know, it felt like Bruce didn't kind of really know what he was doing. So when he finally met Bane in the sewers, and, you know, obviously I have the knowledge of what happens at the end of part one of Nightfall to inform what I fear will happen, but I was legitimately scared for Batman.
About the backbreaking.
I was scared for his character. And, you know, the Joker was nuts doing crazy shit. I never really feared for Batman's life in that movie. But knowing that this was the last one, knowing about Nightfall, and knowing the state Bruce Wayne was in.
Yeah.
Walking into that room, knowing the state he was in mentally and in his life, I haven't been that scared for a protagonist in a long time. And, you know, a lot of that's the baggage I carry in with it. But I thought the movie did an effective job of building that up. Because I was really worried for him. I was worried he wasn't going to walk away from it and he'd possibly die.
Well, that's the thing with Nolan. I mean, anything's possible because he will take that... He'll look outside the box. He'll go outside the square, if you will. Whereas someone, like, if it was Ratner, you know what the hell's going to happen. You know,
Ratner doesn't give a fuck.
Ratner will be like, he'll turn Batman into Hulk Hogan. He'll just, you know, he'll slowly get up and shake his arms, and he'll go pull a stern look, and then belt Bane. It's like, nah, sorry, that doesn't happen in Nolan's world. And
right,
let's get on to Bane. Tom Hardy's performance. What do you think?
Following the Joker is a tall order.
Yeah,
especially a performance as big as Heath Ledger's.
Mm.
Heath Ledger's performance is so big in The Dark Knight, I think at times it tends to devour everything else in the film. Bane is a completely different beast, and I liked that they didn't try to do something similar. Like, you know, everybody was like, oh, it's going to be the Riddler, or this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I think Bane was a very good choice for the villain, because, you know, the Joker is chaos. He's a crazy motherfucker with something to prove. He's trying to make a point. Bane is, he's like Ra's al Ghul, but a little with kind of a bigger, nastier vision. And he has a specific thing in mind that he wants. He's brilliant. He's strong. He's going to get it. And he knows how to manipulate people into getting it. And, you know, he's smart, he's got the brains, but he's also stronger than Batman. He feels like, a lot of people say, you know, there's the whole theme with crawling out of the pit. And there is this abyss that a lot of these characters in these movies have crawled out of. You know, there's an abyss that Ra's al Ghul crawled out of. There's an abyss that Bruce Wayne crawled out of. There's an abyss that the Joker crawled out of. There's an abyss that Bane crawled out of. And I feel like there's an abyss that another character crawled out of that I'm not going to mention.
Did you find you had a problem understanding Bane at times? Because I
did sometimes. I did. I was kind of wishing I had the subtitle button.
Yeah, if there was a flaw with it, what they did, I think they just made him a bit too muffled.
But I mean, I got the gist of what he was saying every time. You know, it's not like I was like, I have no idea what the fuck he just said. It was more like there would be a line or two where I'm like, come again, you know?
Yeah, I had a couple of moments like that where I'm like, I really can't understand what he's saying. I got most of it, but
I did like his accent, though. I thought it was good. I mean, a lot of people were complaining about it. I thought I liked the way his the inflection of his voice with the juxtaposition of his body. I liked that a lot. But
not like a guy from Mad Max 2, who is it?
And
Humongous.
We will just walk away.
Yeah,
just walk away. We will spare your lives if you just walk away.
Yeah. The only reason why they got the Humongous is because some guy was like a Norwegian bodybuilder or some shit, or he was. But nice. Yeah, that's besides the point.
Well, and one film critic said this, and I can't help but wonder if this is true, is that I think one reason it might have been hard to understand Bane is that you kind of miss it. It's kind of hard to understand some of the stuff he says without seeing his mouth, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of that performance is hidden in that mask.
Yeah, the only thing I could never think of was V for Vendetta when Hugo Weaving had the mask on and you didn't see anything of him. It was always the mask on.
Yeah.
Same with Bane. It was like, it never got taken off. There was never that... there was one thing I had a problem with, and this is minor, and this is me probably being me. I felt like Bane was like Michael Myers a bit in this. He was everywhere. He's
well,
like, weird.
A little, turn a little bit, but he's not mindless. He's not ethereal, you know?
No, he's not, but he was just always there.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
sure.
The small traces of things that niggled at me was the circumstance.
Sure.
Like, there was always Selina Kyle was there, or it was always her running into Bruce Wayne or Batman. It was like, it was always Bane was there.
Yeah.
Just my...
There were a few little plot holes here and there, like, how did Bruce get into Gotham after he escaped from the prison?
Well, I gotcha. Did you feel this film, even at the incredible running time of 165 minutes, still felt cut?
Yeah. I think it felt like they were kind of... Because there were little things that were glossed over, like how did Bruce get back into Gotham?
Yeah.
There were a few little things here and there that weren't explained. Like, and Dark Knight had that problem too. Like, one thing that drove me nuts about in The Dark Knight was the Bruce Wayne's party that the Joker crashes, and then Batman jumps out the window to save Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Rachel.
He jumps out the window to save her. And Joker's still up there with all the party guests and his thugs, but it's just left after that. Like, what happened? Did he just walk away?
Maybe,
like,
it's a loose end. Maybe it's a loose end. They don't want to tie it up. Maybe they want you to think about it. I don't know.
That was just one of those things, but there was a little bit of that. It wasn't as... It didn't... There was nothing that bothered me as much as that in this movie, and that's not, like, a big... points lost against The Dark Knight. It's just one thing that bothers me every time I see it. I'm like, what the fuck happened? Like, it's just
maybe it's a reaction they want you to have, I suppose. But
I don't see why they'd want you to have that response, though, 'cause it takes you out of the movie completely. But
this, maybe discussion point later on after you've seen the film. They want you to talk about it.
Yeah,
talk about it with your friends.
But what's the discussion? He left, and Batman.
Well,
just,
it's
like,
open to interpretation. That's the whole thing. It's open to interpretation of what do you think he did?
I mean, it's not that important, you know?
Yeah, but a small bit... Hang on. It's not that important, but it's still a small bit you've brought up 4 years later.
Sure, because so, it drove me nuts.
There you go. Maybe they had that intention all along. And that's the same with this. I mean, I don't know if we're going to get a director's cut or if we're going to get an extended cut, whatever they
no
want to call it.
No one has never done that, so I think the cut we got's the cut we got.
Yeah.
We may have... I don't remember on the Blu-rays if he includes deleted scenes, but I know he's never, to my knowledge... I could be wrong. I'm sure somebody will correct me here if I am. I don't think we've ever gotten a director's cut from Christopher Nolan.
No, it doesn't sound...
I think he's kind of old school where the cut
like
I've made is... Yeah, he's kind of Scorsese-like in this regard. He's not Ridley Scott or Michael Mann where he's... Or George Lucas, where
tinkering,
we always have to go back to our old films and fuck with them. He's very much like, the film I made is the film I made under these circumstances. Here you go.
Yeah.
You know? And on to the next thing.
That's right.
Which I like. But I like that attitude because, you know, in the age of DVD, the director's cut, the extended cut, all blah, 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 has been kind of cheapened. I think there are circumstances that warrant it when the film is taken away, recut by the studio, etc., like Scorsese said. But yeah. I think the director's cut is something that's lost its weight, you know? So I kind of appreciate a director who, even if the film is flawed, is willing to just go on and make another movie. Because, you know, it's just artists who can't move away from a piece of work. It seems to stunt your growth, I find.
Are you listening, Walter Hill? Your director's cut of The Warriors sucks.
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, all the comic book shit, who needs that bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
It just draws attention to his framing, and his framing, I thought, did the job just fine, you know?
I would much rather have the TV cut as an additional feature on there instead of the comic book director's cut one, because the TV cut had a few more.
It just felt like, oh, I just saw the Incredible Hulk, and I can do that too. I mean, not the Incredible Hulk, just Hulk, the Ang Lee one.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Right.
Just felt like he saw that and went, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know? It was just unnecessary. I mean, I'm not like watching it going, oh, this movie's fucking horrible now, but it's just like, it's just distracting. It's just like, I don't need you to call attention, because like Walter Hill, very much, his framing was very comic bookish, but in this director's cut, he's like, well, now I have to call attention to it. No, you don't. Yeah.
No. Now, did you get the impression, and again, it's probably just me, did you get the impression that Selena Kyle was bi?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah? With that girl always hanging off
her? I heard someone say somewhere that there were allusions that she was a prostitute and stuff, and I know that that's in the comics, but I didn't pick that up here, but, you know, she does have that girlfriend.
Okay, now you brought it up, I did, because there was one line she said, girls got to do things to survive.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah. But there was a bit of a traces of bisexuality there, you know, her friends hanging on her and stuff in that house, and,
yeah,
you know, there was a little bit of... what's their relationship, you know?
I'll tell you what, my favorite moment of that whole film, when she jumps on that damn bike and she bends over to reach them handlebars. What a moment.
She did look good in that suit, though, man.
Man, she looked good. I've never been a big fan of Anne Hathaway. I've always said she was very bean polish.
Yeah.
Not.
What was it? Mark Kermode describes her as all eyebrows and teeth.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But in that damn suit, she looked good. But
that suit
does it. You know, like Halle Berry in that suit in that horrible film.
Oh, she looked
good. I mean, you wouldn't want to have fucking Rosie O'Donnell in the cat suit because it looked like absolute shit. You couldn't. Yeah, you can't polish a turd sort of thing. But, you know, some
Michelle
women,
Pfeiffer
it
looked
fits.
Really good in it.
Yeah.
With the vinyl and stuff. Yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn was, what was his name? Daggett? 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 Taggett?
Oh, Daggett, yeah.
Daggett, that was it.
Yeah. Sorry.
He was okay in it. Yeah, I mean, he was only in there for what?
Yeah, he was good. There were, like, Jim Dirks pointed out to me, he said, there's a lot of actors from The Wire in this movie. Like, the guy who played Littlefinger in Game of Thrones was at the very beginning. He was a CIA agent who's like, where's Bane?
I haven't seen The Wire or Game of Thrones, so I couldn't even have a point of reference for it.
Man, that guy's badass, and you know, but he's fantastic. And I haven't seen The Wire, but he's in The Wire, but he's in Game of Thrones, and he tears it up in that show. It's great.
Okay. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was really good in this as well.
Yes, he was. And you know what? I think he is maturing nicely.
He's shaking off that. I mean, because I have the whole series of... Third Rock from the Sun, love it show. Mm-hmm. Love it, love it, love it show. It's really funny. And he's shaken off that young kid, that smart-ass kid with the long hair and from that show to really maturing as an actor.
Well, and like, you know, I think he has become, ever since the movie Brick, I think he's become a very trustworthy actor. He picks projects well. But, you know, he still has a youthfulness to him in movies like that, in Mysterious Skin, in... 500 Days of Summer, exactly. You know, so like when I saw him in Inception, I felt this way about a lot of the cast in Inception, that a lot of them were too young looking. You know, I thought that Joseph Gordon-Levitt looked too young. I thought Juno Page looked way too, not Juno, Ellen Page, sorry, getting her role mixed up with her.
Yeah.
I thought Ellen Page looked way too young to play the role she was given.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of the cast, with a few exceptions, were just too young-looking to be playing those parts. And I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt, as admirably as he played the role, I felt a little too young. But the thing about Gordon-Levitt is you look at him, you can tell he's going to age into roles like that. And I think having seen the trailer for Looper, which looks fantastic, which is from the director of Brick... which I think helped Levitt shift into the mode of a serious actor. But this movie, like, I just thought he's looking like he's aging into this kind of role, and I really bought him as a cop in this movie. Whereas I think 3-4 years ago, I wouldn't have bought him as a cop.
No.
You know, but now I think he really played the role of a young cop really well.
All right, let's get on to the main piece, for as far as I'm concerned, was the whole football stadium bit. That was, I mean, obviously it was CGI, but Holy shit, you wouldn't know.
That whole scene where... It's
fucking incredible.
God, I was never taken out of... I was, you know, Christopher Nolan is a big believer in practical effects. And I know there's plenty of CGI in this movie. Never once was I looking at a shot and going, fake, you know?
Yeah.
Like never once was I going, well, special effects, special effects, special effects. Everything felt so believable to me. I was never taken out by anything like that.
Well, the obvious choice of conversation now, Christian Bale. What did you reckon?
I thought he was very good.
He was good, but he looked very thin, like bordering between machinist thin.
He was still, you know, he wasn't as skinny as that or the fighter.
No.
But I think, you know, Bruce Wayne's hasn't exactly been training. He hasn't been Batman for a while. So yeah. I think he probably has gotten kind of soft. It doesn't look like he's been eating very well, you know. Mm. So I think there was probably a choice to lose some of that muscle mass, you know.
Well, wasn't he just coming off of the fighter when he started doing?
How long ago was the fighter? Fighter was a couple of years, yeah. I mean, they just shot this last year.
Mm, could have been. I don't know.
I don't know. I think what? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't think Bale has, you know, he had some missteps there with Terminator Salvation, but I think he's still one of our great actors, and I still think he, and you know, never when I was watching this movie did I say, oh, like, man, Christian Bale's tearing it up. I was engrossed in him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, it's not like watching Dustin Hoffman where it's Dustin Hoffman. Yeah, he looks so unique and, well, like it's Jack Nicholson or...
Well, like, that's the thing about the Joker and Burton's Batman is that it's fucking Jack Nicholson, you know?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean, whereas I felt everybody disappeared into their roles in this movie. Like, Matthew Modine as the...
I know, right? How good
was
that?
The police guy. I mean, I was like, you know, Man, this guy's a scumbag. This guy's great. And then I was like, hold on, that's fucking Matthew Modine.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's so many... It's kind of like... Nolan, he kind of does this thing like Tarantino where he pulls out these actors that don't have much of a career anymore.
Yeah.
Like in the last movie, he cast Eric Roberts.
As he should.
As he should. Too bad Farmer's not here.
I know, right? He'll run on another 2 hours about Eric Roberts.
Yeah,
Eric Roberts being Eric Roberts. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, he just put Eric Roberts in there, and I thought that was fantastic. Love Eric Roberts.
But... Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but he's good.
Well, in the right role, I think he's a lot of fun.
Like Pope of Greenwich Village. I thought he was very good in that.
Pope of Greenwich Village. Best of the best. But,
but Christian Bale, yeah, get back to him. He was very, very good. So different, like, from Batman Begins. I'm just thinking, like, I watched Batman Begins. I didn't get around The Dark Knight because I was just flat chat before I actually got to seeing Dark Knight Rises. Like, a lot of the debonair of Bruce Wayne had been washed away.
I know. I like that. I mean, he's kind of Howard Hughes at this point, you know? Like, Howard Hughes in his Vegas period.
Oh, yeah, when he's just complete recluse, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the first movie, Bruce Wayne is this troubled, damaged goods kid, and then he... he's this guy who's full of anger and rage, but he hides behind the cars, the girls, and behind the cowl of the Batman, and it carries over into the Dark Knight, and the events of the Dark Knight just destroy him, and you can tell that he's just been atrophying all this time, and you believe it.
Well, to the point where some people don't even recognize him.
Exactly. Like, you know, I mean, people haven't seen him. You know, when he's seen in public, it's a shocker.
Oh, when he goes to that ball that Selena Kyle's at. Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
It's
I mean,
what are you doing here? Yeah.
But it's just, you, and hit the cartilage and his legs is destroyed. By the way, great cameo from Tom Lennon of Reno 911 as the doctor.
Oh, okay.
I don't recommend you go hella skiing, Mr. Wayne. he wrote a fantastic book on screenwriting with Robert Ben Gurant called How to Write Movies for Fun and Profit.
Yeah.
And it's a really funny read.
Okay.
But Tom Lennon's awesome. I think he's hilarious. He's a funny writer. When he popped up in the movie, I put a big goofy grin on my face.
Well, I'd rather have him there than Buddy Kevin Smith, because I mean, I would completely take him.
God, whenever Kevin Smith pops up in a comic book movie, I'm just like, get the fuck out of here.
Like Daredevil. Oh, yeah.
Daredevil. You know me, buddy. It's just like, oh, Jesus. God, it's just like Foghorn Leghorn from Toontown just came out. It's just like, hey, really... kid. It's like in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back where it freeze frames and the arrow points to Mark Hamill. It says, hey, kids, it's Mark Hamill. Yeah. Hey, kids, it's Kevin Smith.
Basically. Now, who was the woman who played... I missed her name on the credits. She played Tate or Talia? Talia al Ghul in the end?
Talia al Ghul. That was Marion Cotillard. She was in Inception. And Oscar-winning actress for La Vie en Rose. Yeah, she played Edith Piaf. Is that her name?
Edith Piaf, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was actually funny because she was in Inception, and Edith Piaf's song plays whenever, you know, they're going to wake up or something.
Yeah.
And Marion Cotillard showed up in that, but yeah, she won an Oscar for that film.
Okay. Well, I wasn't familiar with who she was. I think she's about the only name I didn't, or the only face I couldn't put a name to in it when I was watching it, but she was good, apart from one thing. Hmm. When she died, it was like a kid's stage play death. It was, she mumbled a few words and it was like, the head cocks to the right and it's sitting there, she's dead. It was like,
yeah. I just remembered hearing fan speculation. When it turned out she was Talia al Ghul, I nearly shit my pants with excitement. And
well, you know,
like,
what?
Holy fuck. You know, it all makes sense.
In all honesty, like I was just talking to Andrew not long ago and I said, he was telling me about Talia al Ghul, some comic that he was bringing up, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there thinking, and when they kept mentioning the name Tate, and I thought, I wonder if we're going to see Talia al Ghul. Because we do get a cameo from Liam Neeson as Raz.
Liam Neeson does show up again as Raz.
It's like an apparition or a mirage.
And we get some flashbacks, too.
Yeah. You know what? There's a thing you can bring up. The flashbacks. Everyone kept saying, like, that idiot Harry Knowles kept saying, oh, it's called Flashback, the movie. It's like, you know what? I didn't see that many. I saw the ones I did see were justified being
there. The ones that are there because they're moving the plot along.
They're moving the plot along, exactly. It wasn't like Flashback for this. It wasn't like The Hills Have Eyes Part 2 where the Wes Craven one where there was flashbacks from a dog's point of view for the sake of padding out a film. They were there for a reason.
Yes.
Yeah, so... No, I didn't have a problem with flashbacks. I was expecting a barrage of them, but there was only maybe, four or five at the most.
No,
and they weren't very long.
But they weren't, like, lengthy or anything.
No,
they
just
weren't
small,
like,
vignettes,
entire
really.
Acts. It was just a little bit here and there to fill in some plot, you know?
So I was quite happy with that once I walked away from the film and said, well, it wasn't chock-a-block full of flashbacks. It was they were there for a reason, so that was fine, you know? Critics' standpoint on this one, it's been pretty harsh. We got a guy out here called this guy called Paul Harris here, who's basically any superhero film that comes out will get a very, very high rating. Like we're talking nines and tens. About 8.5 to 9
from him?
Out of 10. From him. Okay. Yeah. He gave the Avengers like 9.5. I was like, okay, you know my feelings on that, but that's your opinion, sure. That's fine. You like to talk. He comes along on the radio. And I'm listening to him, and he goes, oh, this week I'm reviewing The Dark Knight Rises. I thought, oh, okay, I really want to see what you got to say about it. And he just went on, and he gave, like, a tirade of how much he disliked it and how it was, like, how everything being shoved into a blender and just blended together and hopefully something edible or something with a decent taste comes out once you've consumed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up giving it a 7, which for Paul Harris is low. It's actually...
Which I always wonder about that. Like, some film critics, you know... If you're going to use a 1 to 10 scale, a 5 is average.
Yeah, okay? A 3 is a low.
Like, if anything below a 5 is a bad rating to me.
Yeah.
A 5 is not good, but it's not, like, you know, it's not a piece, it's not a complete shit fest. But at the same time, I'd rather watch a movie that's a 1 or a 2 than a 5. But,
Yeah, because you know you're going to get a piece of shit.
I'm going to get a strong reaction out of it. I'm going to be like, whoa, what the hell is this, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it drives me nuts. Some publications, like a 6 or a 7 will be a low rating. Like, I've done that where I've seen that where I'll read a review that just trashes something and it's a 7. I'm like, well, hold on. That's a positive review. A 7 is like I'd say
above good. Average, slightly above
I'd say,
average.
I'd say above average. It's good. It's worth seeing. Maybe yeah. not everybody's cup of tea, but maybe not your cup. You know, it's got some flaws, but it's still good stuff. But I see that a lot, and I'm just like, do you know how your rating system works? Like, it sounds like what you rated was a 4 or 3.
Yeah, that's right. But even like the biggest suck ass out there on the web, and I'm going to say it, Harry Knowles. I mean, I did go into Anacool News yesterday or the day before, I think.
I can't read his stuff. I just can't.
And it just had Dark Knight Rises.
You have a much higher threshold for pain than I, sir.
I was just curious, because I was actually going on there, for new release titles coming out for this week, and I wasn't on Blu-ray.com or whatever. And I'm just like, the Dark Knight Rises disappoints. I thought, here we go. Oh. I want to skimp over it without being spoiled, obviously.
Well, Harry probably didn't like it because it trashes Occupy or something.
Probably, yeah. Like I said, I didn't read a great deal of it because I didn't want to get any spoilers, you know, thrown my way before I see the actual film. I mean, sure. With a film like this, it's really hard to sort of avoid some sort of tidbit that's in the film that you don't want to know about until you have seen it. So I was really, like I said, I skated over the actual thing there, and you know, he was sitting in his fucking chair out in Austin. He was, oh man, Batman, no good, blah blah blah. Just like, well, if Harry Knowles don't like it, not that anything that Harry Knowles says holds any weight with me,
but it's like, if he doesn't like it, you know, because he likes everything.
Maybe they can give him a fucking premiere.
He's the man
pass.
With no discernible palate whatsoever. Which is,
yeah.
Whenever people say like, "Oh, I like everything," or "I give everything a shot," I'm like, "Yeah, you have no discernible palate."
Let's do something.
I don't
live
give anybody
right
the benefit of a doubt.
Okay, let's break protocol with this show for a second. All right,
I'm going to
do this live while we. I'm going to check something. I'm going to check the tomato meter on this right now.
Oh, okay.
Our friend the tomato meter.
Your favorite. It's got an 80. It had an 80-something last time I checked.
Okay, let's have a look. Tomato meter. All right. For The Dark Knight Rises, I think it's
a lot of controversy with this movie over at Rotten Tomatoes.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Tomato, yeah.
Good old joke. All right. Dark Knight Rises. 86%.
Yep. No, that sounds about right.
Okay. That sounds about right. So the tomato meter don't lie.
It's got a strong positive reaction from critics. But, you know, when I posted my thoughts about this on Facebook, most of my friends were saying they didn't like this movie.
I did go out on Twitter and say that I'm abandoning this film. I was just so sick of everything after everything. I just said, I don't want to see this film. Until you came to me and said, oh, Dark Knight Rises show. I thought, well, you know what? I do want to see it. I'd be lying if I said I didn't want
to. I wanted
to
know
it,
your opinion on it, and I really thought it would make for a good conversation, knowing...
Because you walked away saying Stuart's going to hate it, right?
I thought you were going to hate it, so I was like, well, this should be interesting. But you liked it, which surprises me and pleases me.
But like I said, this is one film I had to think about for a long time. I don't really do that. The only other film I didn't... It's like, I've been spoilt in the last 3 days. I've had two films that have blown my fucking socks off, which is The Dark Knight Rises and one I saw called Grizzly Man.
Grizzly Man's great. I love that film.
My God, it just left me shaking after. It's like, so I've been spoiled with these two films. Dark Knight Rises didn't quite get me like Grizzly Man, but I really, really
Grizzly Man, what, that movie just has some of the most astounding footage ever captured.
Oh my God, yeah.
In it, with the bears and stuff. Just footage of bears that is unparalleled. You know,
yeah. I mean, you couldn't get that on the, you know, David Attenborough sort of.
No, forget Attenborough. You know,
He wouldn't even get that close to what Treadwell got with the Bears. But that's besides the point.
But the Bears got Treadwell, so
yeah, he didn't tread too well that day, I suppose.
No, but it's a week.
Yeah, he's leave your tips in the jar. Thanks. Yeah. I said tips. All right. But again, that's Werner Herzog, so it's obviously going to be brilliant because he's a fucking genius.
Yeah, of course. He's one of the great filmmakers.
That we need to speak about one day, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially the work he did with Kinski. But so, like, with Dark Knight Rises, we've pretty much gone over what we could.
I think we've covered it I think we covered what we want to cover. But yeah. I will say, though, like, I do feel the way you felt where I walked out of it and it was all I was thinking about for the rest of the day. Like, I just had that movie on the brain, you know, it just, and like a lot of people, but I do want to talk about real quick.
Sure.
A lot of my friends have said they don't like it. You know, a lot of them think I'm insane for saying that the movie slimes Occupy and that they don't see it. But I think that they're thinking too literally with their metaphors.
Yeah.
You know, if you there's some, I know it's a right wing site, but there's some, I think, very astute analysis over at Big Hollywood of it. It may be a little grandstandish with its the way it's worded, but it's pretty dead on with its reading. Okay. But some of my friends have said the only reason you like it is because it's anti-Occupy and I don't even think it's there and blah, blah, blah. That's not true. That's just icing on the cake. I really thought this was, I think this is my favorite of the series so far. I need to see it again before I can definitively say that.
Yeah.
I want to watch them all again. Because this weekend, I'm definitely going to watch Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and then go see Dark Knight Rises again. But tentatively, I am saying it is my favorite of the series. And, you know, you can nitpick it all you want, but the things, everything worked for me in it on such a great level. And I thought thematically it was one of the strongest, and it just really took everything that was it has this a totally different feel than the other two, but it brought the series full circle, and in a way that was smart and engaging, and it just had such a great arc for Bruce Wayne and tied it up so nicely. And you know,
it does. I mean, I'll get back to the ending again, because I'm in love with that last 5 minutes of that film. It's just, of all the three films, the epic three films they've made, they've tied it up. They couldn't have tied it up any better, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect the way they've tied it up. Yeah.
I mean, they really took it there.
Imagine the letdown of having an ending that was just like, you know.
I know.
This epic trilogy. And I hate that word trilogy, but that's what it is.
Oh, me too. It's like director's cut, it's something that's lost all meaning.
Yeah, it does.
But this really is a trilogy, though. Like,
it's a true trilogy. It's not like it's fucking...
The three pieces fit together.
Yeah.
And they create a really... Like, Nolan, like, has created such a nice little alternate movie verse for Batman. And it's very self-contained, and it has its own rules, its own mythology, its own way of doing things. And I think he really just came against all expectations. And, you know, you can nitpick, it looks a little more like New York than Chicago this time around. Or, you know, there are little things. Oh, you know, the Hudson River doesn't freeze, but it's not New York, it's Gotham City. But I always felt Gotham felt kind of nebulous. It looked one way in the first film, it looked another way in the second, it looks another way in the third. The first movie is kind of twilight-ish looking, the second one is very dark, nighttime. This one's bright day. You know, all three movies
the palettes are all different,
They have a very specific feel, and Nolan doesn't make the same movie twice in this regard. Yeah. I mean, he has very specific things he does. Like, he kind of has the rules of his universe. There are certain things that Nolan does that make it a Christopher Nolan film, but no two of these Batman movies feel the same. They all feel very unique.
It's like you're watching a rehash of the other, not like you're saying, oh, this is Dark Knight with a different
Like that was the problem with Spider-Man 3, was that there were so many things in it that we'd seen before in the Spider-Man movies. Like, we're going to hang Mary Jane from a tall structure again.
You know,
there were all these things in Spider-Man 3 that were just repeats of what we'd seen in the other Spider-Man movies.
But as you know, with Spider-Man 3, you could see Raimi was just disinterested. He just wants, like, let's get it over with, please.
The studio was telling him what to do, and he was just kind of asleep at the wheel. You know, he was just guiding traffic. You know, and then he went and made Drag Me to Hell, and he was vibrant and on fire again.
Hell yes, he was.
So
now, one piece I really liked in this film was towards the end when Jim Gordon, he works out who he is.
And Jim Gordon, holy shit.
Man, we all talk about Gary Oldman. I think it's the best performance of Oldman in the Batman trilogy.
I agree.
I think it's my favorite of his. for sure. I mean, he's good. Oldman's a stellar actor. We all know that.
In all the other Batman films, Gordon, and when I say the other ones, I mean the ones that aren't by Christopher Nolan. Jim Gordon's just there as a Captain Exposition character.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Batman, we need, you know, hey, Batman, you know, this is going on and there's a problem in the city. Go face it. Yeah. Gordon's a full-fledged character in these movies, and he has an arc in these films that's just as big as Bruce Wayne's.
Yeah.
You know, he starts off as the cop who's as the good cop in a sea of corruption.
Yeah.
And by the end, he's the scarred war hero, you know?
Yeah. But the one bit that I was getting to was where Batman's about to take off, and Jim Gordon says, I don't know who you are. I don't want to know who you are. And he goes, and Batman, he says something, he mumbles about something as little as putting a coat over a boy who was told that there was...
putting a coat over a boy who's...
I was like, man, I got fucking goosebumps when I saw it. I thought, what a brilliantly written little bit. Just to let him know, I'm not going to tell you who you are. If you can cast your mind back to that little boy who you looked after all those years ago, that's who I am. Yeah. And he takes off and he goes... And it's the way that Oldman says Bruce Wayne. He doesn't go, oh, it's Bruce Wayne. He goes, Bruce Wayne. Like, I can't emulate Oldman, obviously. I'm not an actor.
But the way he said it was, you get the perfect idea, the inflection.
It was just perfect.
The thing is, like you said, the ending of that movie, it does pack such an emotional punch. Like, I welled up a bit during the final 15 minutes of that film.
I did with that part what I just mentioned about putting the coat over the little boy, I thought.
Yeah.
Brilliantly written. Very brilliantly written. And I think that was the point. That was the first of the many parts at the end that started to get to me. I think, oh, okay, it's starting to come together. After all this long time I sat through this film, it's finally starting to come together. And it kept coming together and coming together until we got to that very bit. And that's what I told you before I walked away. I thought, this is fucking brilliant. What a film. So, yeah, really. I mean, and I usually die off after... A day after, I'll see a film. I'll be on a big high from it, and I'll come down.
Yeah,
I've gone from to building, like a building process, to reaching the high. Basically, that now talking about it with you, where I've just I thought yesterday, like I came home and Karen said, "How'd you like?" I said, "Yeah, it was really good." I've gone from that last night to today, thinking when I woke up this morning and thinking about it more, I thought, "Geez, that was really good today."
Yeah.
Proclaiming it to be fucking brilliant. I really think it is a brilliant film.
It's in my top five of the year so far. I mean, just...
Yeah, it would be for me as well.
I did not expect that at all. I was kind of like, wasn't sure about it going in. I was kind of like you, I was kind of wondering, you know, is the bloom going to be off the rose for Nolan's Batman for me? You know.
Well, after I'd heard about the reviews and not gone too deep into them about the... you know, the ins and outs of what happens throughout the film, and people turn around, and I mean, this is a really polarizing film because people said it's horrible, it's really not good, and some people saying
I've had friends send me emails saying, like, after my post on Facebook, how can you like this movie? This movie's not good, you know, and I don't know. I don't like arguing with people about whether or not a movie's good. So obviously, you didn't like it. I liked it.
Yeah.
Your opinion's not going to change my opinion. We're not going to find any clarity here. We're just going to be screaming our opinions at each other. So,
yeah.
You know, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Because most people on the internet aren't interested in finding clarity or anything like that. And, you know, it's just, we're just going to be shouting opinions at each other.
Yeah. Basically, that's all it's going to be. But when you came to me and said it may be my best of the three, I thought, because I trust you enough.
Yeah.
We don't always see eye to eye on things, obviously, but I trust you enough.
Sure.
For me to you know, lift my ban that I had placed on the film. Because I said, like I said, I put out on Twitter, I'm going to catch this film maybe one day on home video. But when you came to me and said, it might be my favorite of the three, that's what got me really thinking, All right. And then you said, you want to do a Dark Knight Rises show? I said, okay, screw it. I'll go see it.
Yeah. And aren't you glad?
I am glad. I mean, I can even look past the $18.50 I paid and think, geez. Hey, okay, it's gone, but it was well worth it.
You know, like, I've been high off this movie for a few days, and when I say I'm high, I mean, I've been like, man, I can't believe how much I liked that.
Yeah,
and it's rare that happens where I'm just still like, man, like, and a movie like that's a sequel, if it makes you want to go back and watch the movies that came before it. It's like when you listen to a new album by your favorite band, and it makes you go back and listen to their other records.
Like Anthrax.
Like, you know, when Anthrax's Worship Music came out, it made me want to go back and listen to, you know, Among the Living and Spreading the Disease. Because
you want to hear the good stuff Anthrax did, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, but I love the new Anthrax album.
Yeah, it's okay. I can deal with it.
I think it's their best since Sound of White Noise.
Yeah, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, though? Like,
yeah,
you
I'm
know,
with you. I got the analogy,
you,
yeah.
You get
yeah.
a new record, and it makes you go back and listen to it because you like it so much. You kind of want to hear the sound that got it there. And for me, it makes me want to go back and watch Batman Begins. It makes me want to watch Dark Knight. It makes me want to go see Dark Knight Rises again. I mean,
it does. Just, and I didn't have that feeling after Dark Knight. I didn't have that feeling to want to see it again.
No, not me neither, actually. I saw Dark Knight. I think I just saw it once in the theater.
I saw it once in the theater.
I was like, yeah, it was good.
I
wasn't high off of it.
I mean, I picked it up, I think the first or second day it came out in Blu-ray. Obviously, because I wanted to get it. But the thing was, I wasn't like, I got to see it again. You know,
me neither.
I've got to watch it now. I'm like that with this one.
Yeah, me too. I mean, seriously, like Batman Begins, saw it, really liked it, bought it on video, watched it occasionally, enjoyed it every time. Dark Knight, saw it once in the theater, thought it was good, you know, bought it on video, watched it a couple times, you know, was like, yeah, it's a solid movie. This one, though, I just came out of it just high as a kite, you know, and... Yeah. You know, and the thing is though, usually I'm like, well, am I buzzing off something? You know, sometimes when I see a movie, I just buzz off things. And then after swirling it in my mouth around a bit, it kind of the bloom comes off the rose a bit. But with this movie, it just hasn't happened. And that's one reason I want to see it.
It's resonated, yeah.
But it's just really stayed with me. And like, I just haven't had the itch to go back and see a movie. Like, I mean, it's happened a few times where... recently where, you know, I'd gone back to see a movie a couple times, but it was mostly because I just had fun watching it, like The Avengers, which was just a good rollicking time for me. But this movie, just, I got the full four-course meal from, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just rare that a movie does that, where I just get so excited coming out of it, especially a big mainstream movie. Like, I really like that Christopher Nolan is able to do this and is able to make these big blockbusters like this.
And carry the whole three films through without this floundering as the third.
Sure.
I mean, thank God, because I was worried after Inception, because, you know, I was like, I was really indifferent to it. Very clever, but really indifferent to it.
I'm with you there. The first time when I saw Inception, I came out buzzing, and then after a day or two, I kind of went, yeah, you know, that was good.
Yeah, but I wasn't buzzing. I was just like, it's okay. And that's why I said, I think as far back as early last year, I said, I really hope I wish he had a tripped up with Inception so he doesn't trip up with Batman, but thank God he didn't.
Yep.
You know,
I really like Inception, but it's not my favorite Christopher Nolan. I actually think it's one of his, probably his lesser films.
It's lesser works, yeah. Same with me.
But it does have a lot of strong ideas, and I like that somebody is able to make a movie like that and get away with it. And, you know, Nolan has his detractors out there, and fair enough, you know, his stuff is kind of a specific taste, but it is a populist taste. But, you know, like our friends at Damaged Viewing, they don't like Christopher Nolan's movies. And I'm willing to bet they won't like this one, although, you know, they may like some of the Occupy digs. But, they don't like Nolan's films. And that's cool, because there are reasons for liking him. It's very much a personal taste thing.
Yeah.
But they don't like... Like, John Grace jokes that it's the BBC's presentation of the Batman. You know, he's like, this summer, the BBC resumes its presentation of the Batman. And you know, so they have very funny and smart reasons for not liking these movies, but it really comes down to taste. Like, I really think Christopher Nolan is a talented filmmaker, and I like that he has this place in Hollywood. And
I mean,
I'm really excited to see where he goes next.
With me, I'm not the sort of guy out there, because there's a lot of them out there. I'm not going to name any names, obviously, but there's a lot of people out there with Nolan's dick in their mouth. I'm not one.
Oh, God. I know. No, that's the thing is, I'm gushing over this movie, but I've had the time to sit down and think about it. But there are some people who consider Nolan to be just a god, and it's kind of ridiculous.
And that's why when I put up the Grizzly Man post, I said there's more to film than Nolan. I'm not saying he's bad, but I'm saying there's more to him than just that.
There's
Werner Herzog, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people...
And a myriad of others out there you can turn to who are going to give you more goodness on top of what he gives you as well.
Right.
So that's why I wasn't knocking the guy. But, I mean, two questions for you. Let's finish it up. Okay, yeah, let's wrap it up. Two questions for you. Do you think they'll carry on with the Batman brand with this? Okay, Nolan's gone. Christian Bale's gone. They said they're definitely not coming back. Do you think Warner will carry on with this?
They have to. Yes, they will.
Okay, you reckon they will?
Yep. Will they carry on with Batman? Is too big to not keep going. Now, I do think that they're going to try to take a page out of Marvel's playbook and do a Justice League type thing with it. But we'll see.
Do we get a Batman film or do we get a Robin film? Because they're alluding to it in the end. Obviously.
Well, the question is, will it follow in Nolan's continuity? And I really hope they don't. I really hope they leave it alone.
Yeah.
But the Batman brand will continue in movies. Now, it kind of depends on where they go with this new Superman film, but I do think that, you know, DC is going to and Warner Brothers are going to try to do something with this stable of characters like Marvel, but I don't think they have a plan of attack, and I don't know if it's going to be as organized an effort, but we'll see. A Justice League movie has been attempted in the past. George Miller was going to do it.
What are you talking about? I watched a Justice League movie from about 98 or 99, and it was horrible.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, with a Flash and...
Well, no, this was going to be like a big animated movie, and George Miller was going to do it, I think.
Oh, cool.
If I'm wrong, correct me. But, yeah. You know, a Justice League movie is out there, and so I don't know. If they bring back Batman, they may try to do it on a bigger scale like that, Marvel's doing, but we'll see.
Okay. Now, take the three Nolan films, rank them. Worst to best.
Okay. Dark Knight Rises. Right now, as I record this, Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins. Oh, wait. This is top to bottom.
We're going three. Yeah, bottom to top. Bottom to top.
Bottom to top? Okay.
3-1, yeah.
Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. I am going to go Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins, but there's an asterisk next to Dark Knight Rises because that's still my top spot yet.
Yep. I mean, but right Dark now, Knight's my Dark least Knight favorite. Rises at the is moment, on top for me, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. But mine's with an asterisk, and that is when I watch it again on home video, because I plan to do, well, all three. Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises. Mm-hmm. And then make my final decision from there. But at the moment, yeah, like it more than Dark Knight. Don't hate Dark Knight, but it's not the sort of one I can just pop in and watch all the time.
Yeah.
It's going to piss people off, but I'm sorry.
I think Dark Knight is a good middle chapter.
Yeah,
but I think it's a strong middle chapter.
It's not it's not the greatest superhero film of all time. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. No, it's
made the most money, but it's not the greatest of the lot. No,
no, it's not.
It's not. It's not the benchmark. It has by a long shot.
It has a holy shit performance from Heath Ledger.
Yeah,
I mean that is the thing that really stands out about that movie. But it's a strong middle chapter.
It is. Now let's take the last one, the last little quiz I got for you.
Okay.
Let's take all of the 8 live-action Batmans and rank them. Live-action only, no animated.
All the live-action Batmans?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, Batman and Robin would have to be at the bottom. Right above that would be probably Batman Returns, because that movie bores the shit out of me. It's visually stunning. But
yeah.
I'm just so bored whenever I watch it. I just can't get into it. Above that, Batman Forever.
Yep.
Because Batman and Forever is retarded, but I do get a sort of perverse enjoyment out of elements of it. Above that would be the Adam West Batman the movie. Fun flick, bat shark repellent, fun stuff. It's goofy, but, you know, I think it's a little long and it's a little much, you know?
Yeah.
But it has some great stuff in there. Above that, Batman with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, fun times.
Yep.
And then The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. All right, well, mine is slightly different than yours. I'm going to go Batman Robin last.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Forever.
Okay.
Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to throw The Dark Knight a bit further down the ladder.
Really?
Yeah, I like it, but it's an enjoyment level for me to sit through for 2.5 hours.
It's tough.
Not quite there.
It's tough.
It's a tough 2.5 hours, yeah. After that, I'm going to go, I'll probably go Batman, Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah. Tim Burton's Batman, it's It's fun to watch. I mean, even
I still have a love for it. You know, me too. It's not a great film, but I still have a lot of I still get a lot of enjoyment out of watching it.
I mean, Michael Keaton saying "Let's get nuts," that just makes it for me.
Okay, after that, I will put Batman: The Adam West One, Dark Knight Rises, and Batman Begins is still my favorite Batman film.
Okay,
yeah. All right, Batman: Dark Knight Rises is complete.
Yep.
Thanks for pushing me into this, actually, and watching it, because I probably wouldn't have watched it unless I got my hands on the home video version. So, big thanks for that, to actually get me off my butt to see this. And I only watched it because of the reason I had to do this show with you, so I had to have seen it. But
yeah. Well, I'm glad that it was rewarding for you.
Aren't the listeners glad it's actually something you and I like together?
I know, right?
Yeah, especially after the Avengers debacle.
It's not you complaining and me going, what are you talking about?
What's your problem, you Stuart? I mean...
Stuart? You're such a dick.
Come on, Stu. Have some fun
with it.
Come
on,
Stu. Shut up!
Lighten up, man. Lighten up.
Yeah. All right, let's get to something that's a bit important for us.
Yes.
All jokes aside.
Now, Batman's done. Now we have some business to discuss.
Yeah. This show's been going nearly 2 years now, and we've had a lot of fun doing it.
Yep.
No, we're not calling it quits. We're not going to hit you with a thing saying this is the last one. We are starting to incur a few bills with this thing. It's starting to get a bit above our heads financially.
It costs a little bit to. It costs us money to put this show out, and you know, and we put it out there, and we don't ask for anything in return.
Never have before. We sort of had a pact when we first started, and we're saying, right, we'll never ask for donations, which is what we're getting to, because we thought we could wing it. But as traffic increased on our website, the more popular you get, the domain price goes up.
Yep.
So that was something I didn't foresee.
Yeah.
When I was doing the side of it that we had to pay the bill for.
Mm-hmm.
So we are actually going to ask if donations, if you guys like the show enough, which, judging by the numbers, there's a lot of people out there who do, and we're very thankful for that.
Yes. If you've been listening to the show and you subscribe, and if you're listening right now, thank you very much, and we hope it's been worth your time. But, you know, if you feel so desired, don't worry. We're not going to start charging for the show or anything. It's still going to be free.
Yeah.
But if you really like this show and you want to help us out, we would be very appreciative, because it costs a little bit to put this out there, and if you want to, you can throw a few bucks our way. We would very much appreciate it.
Yeah.
So how would they go about doing this?
Okay, what we'll be doing in the next few days after this show drops, if not by the time the episode drops at the time, there will be a PayPal button on the website.
Yep. Not hard to miss. I mean,
not hard to miss. No, you guys.
I mean,
will
hard
see it
to
there.
Miss. Sorry.
Yeah, you guys will see it there. If you want to just click that, it'll lead you to an account, which is what we'll have. And this account will not be for us to, it'll be obviously to pay the bills, and the proceeds aren't going to go to us.
We aren't
going to
buy
snorting cocaine
hookers
and shit
with this.
Yeah,
this
hookers.
Is,
I mean,
any money we get from this will go into the show.
Exactly. And what we plan to do with that is upgrade our equipment. What we've got at the moment is reasonable, but we've been shown the light of what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd really like to get our hands on that equipment. But
yeah, we'd like to improve the product we're putting out. And, you know, there are some expenses with the website and keeping these shows up. It just adds up, and
bandwidth,
so any
and
donations
sort of
would be very much appreciated in trying to keep this show going and to improve the quality of what you hear, what we put out.
Having said that, that's it.
Yeah, so you can visit us at midnightmoviecowboys.com.
Yep.
You can visit me on Twitter at HunterDeucing, D as in David, U-E-S-I-N-G. And you can find Stu at The Real Rebel, R-E-E-L, Rebel, The Real Rebel.
Because I'm a rebel.
Because he's a rebel. You can follow the show on Twitter at MMCowboys.
Which will start posting a lot more. We'll also start posting a lot more tweets off of the MMCowboys one. So get your friends hooked up with that. I'm on Facebook as well, under my name.
And be sure to like us on Facebook. Like our page on Facebook. We've been kind of flatlining with the likes a little bit. We'd like to get a few more. So if you haven't liked the page on Facebook, please do so. Also, iTunes. Leave us a review if you like the show. If you don't like the show, nothing's stopping you from leaving a negative review, but please don't. Just kidding. It's a free country.
All negative reviews will result in death. No, they won't.
No,
just leave
no,
up there
no.
what you got to leave up there.
You know, if you don't like us, constructive criticism. Constructive
yeah,
criticism.
Constructive. Yeah.
If it's constructive criticism, don't be a dick, all right? So, reviews on iTunes help. It just helps us get a little bit more exposure. So if you just want to take
basically
a few seconds to do that.
Spread the word about the show.
Spread the love. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you don't want to donate, but you like the show, tell a friend.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe that friend, preferably a rich friend, who can give us money.
Are you going to steal my thunder? I was going to say, if you won't, they will.
Just if you don't want to donate, just tell a friend who has deep pockets and loves Australian people. All right?
Yeah, could you possibly someone pass a show on to Bill Gates would be nice.
Or, pass it on to Richard Branson or something.
Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch. Yeah, see if Rupert Murdoch wants to buy Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Yeah.
He might after my bit on Occupy and Obama earlier. But,
yeah. Plus, I do watch Fox News quite a bit, Rupert, so if you're listening. All right, that's it. Midnight Movie Cowboys, right. I'm done.
All right, adios, everybody.